Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio program. I'm Susan Larison-Dam, and I am welcoming you today just over the lunch hour from the Pacific Northwest, and it is just a beautiful sunny day here. I'm actually looking out my window at Mount Hood, which is just all snowy and glistening in the sun. It's going to be very warm here for the Pacific Northwest. I think it's supposed to be 90. So I'm sitting here with open windows and a beautiful view, and I am so delighted to be bringing back on the program a regular guest. He's really been with this show from very early on and also had his own show on Blog Talk Radio for a while. His name is Mark David Gerson. And Mark David has written many books. He is an award-winning author. He is also a very inspirational coach. I have said it before on this show. He was one of the people who helped me very early on as I was just coming off my days writing on the Oprah Forum, and he helped me use my name as opposed to writing anonymously. So Mark David has helped me a lot on my own path. He just released the new book, Organic Screenwriting, Writing for Film Naturally. And he's going to talk to us today about his own story of how he translated his Quintana trilogy of fantasy novels into screenplay adaptations. And Mark David is known for talking about writing in such a way that it is approachable for everyone who is called to write. He is the author of From Memory to Memoir, Writing the Stories of Your Life. Another book, Writer's Block Unblocked, 7 Sure Ways to Free Up Your Writing and Creative Flow. And he's also the writer of a very popular book, The Voice of the Muse, Answering the Call to Write. And that book was recognized in a variety of ways, and he produced a meditation CD set to go with it, as well as a very popular You Are a Writer meditation video, which is on YouTube. Mark David is multi-talented, very creative. He's an artist. He often shares his beautiful photography, very creative photography. He speaks on many topics to inspire us. He is a mentor, he is a seminar leader, and he's been doing this for over 20 years. He is able to help people open up to their intuition, to their innate wisdom. And he also has written very honestly about his own life in the book Acts of Surrender, and we talked about that on a previous show as well. This intro will go on and on because there are just so many things that he's done, because he's even developing the Quintana stories for the musical stage, his trilogy of books. You can learn more about Mark David at markdavidgerson.com. His website is on the show page. And just to tell you what someone said about his book about screenwriting, organic screenwriting, here is something that Luke Yenke, screenwriter, playwright, and author of Just Outside the Spotlight, said about this new book. Quote, "Finally, a book for screenwriters that focuses on creativity, not rules." Unquote. And let me say That is one of the hallmarks of the message that Mark David Gerson has been sharing with all of us for quite a while. So after quite the lengthy introduction, I am just so happy to bring Mark David Gerson on the line. Hello, Mark David.
Hi, Susan. Thank you for the wonderful introduction. I'm feeling very old, but very accomplished.
Well, there are just so many things to say. I'm finding this more and more. And I love just, there are just so many things to share about the various facets of what you've done, because you really have pursued many different avenues of this, exploring your own creativity.
Well, it's interesting, of course, because all those avenues and all those books really, really, in the end, carry a very some very simple, similar themes and messages, even the novels. And so, which, you know, it's taken me 9 books to kind of see that there really is a through line in everything that I do.
Yes. Yes. Well, I wonder if you could start this broadcast today in a way much like you start your book, with your own story, because it's so fascinating how you came to write a book about screenwriting, how you came to write your own screenplays, and what you saw as a need in that area that could help people.
Sure. It's... you have to go back, almost a decade, I guess, almost a decade. I had written my very first novel, The Moon Quest, which I began writing 20 years ago, and I had it. This was, I guess, in 2005 or 6. I had had it with an agent for a couple of years. She'd done her best, but it hadn't really gone anywhere. And we had agreed amicably to part company, and for her. So basically, I had this manuscript and no agent and no publishing prospects. And in those days, when I talk about this in Acts of Surrender, the memoir, I'd been traveling full time for about 2 years. I was kind of on the road, and I was driving cross country one day. From the Midwest, where I'd done some events, back to the Southwest, back to New Mexico, and my cell phone rang. I picked up the phone, and it was a friend, it was actually my former wife, with whom I'm pleased to say I'm still on very good terms. And she were chatting, and she said, "So what's happening with the Moon Quest?" Because the Moon Quest, although I'd written it before we were married, I got the agent while we were married, and I was kind of a little bit depressed about it. I said, "Well, not a whole lot." The agent, I told her that the agent and I had parted company. I really had, it was kind of sitting, you know, in a box or a computer file, and not much was happening. And then she said something that she had said multiple times before that I'd always ignored, which was, "Why don't you write it as a screenplay?" And I'd always ignored it because I didn't know how to write a screenplay. Forgetting that when I wrote the novel, I didn't know how to write a novel either. But, you know, that was just, we all have short-term memory issues like that when we choose. And really, although I'd always seen the story cinematically and seen it as a movie, never in my most wild imagining did I ever think that I would write a screenplay. I mean, my fantasy was, the book would be a huge success. The film rights would be snapped up instantly. You know, a director of the caliber of Spielberg would be frothing at the mouth to direct it, and I'd live happily ever after on the royalties. Life doesn't always work that way. And so when she said, "Why don't you write the screenplay?" and I began to give her the same answer that I'd given her before, something stopped me. And we chatted on some more. And as I continued my drive down toward Santa Fe, which is where I was headed, it just kind of, the idea of it kind of lodged in my brain in a way that it had never done before. It's almost as though the story was saying, okay, now you do it. So I got to Santa Fe. I went into Borders, which tells you that it was a few years back, and looked at the screenwriting books, figuring that if I'm going to do this, I at least need to have some guidance, because screenwriting, to my mind, was a pretty demanding, technical kind of craft. And really, I don't think I ever even read a screenplay. I knew nothing about it. I mean, I'm a big fan of movies, of course, but I didn't really know anything about it. So I'm scanning the bookshelves. And just to backtrack, the way I write, the way I teach writing, the way I coach really is not about rules. It's not about structure. It's really about discernment and intuition and trust and surrender. A lot of the things that none of these screenwriting books talks about. They were all focused on structure. They were all focused on very technical aspects. I did manage to find a few that kind of sort of touched on the methods that I had used to teach and write. And I did find one on screenplay format, which, again, was important. But I never really found anything that would really guide me in the way that I, in the ways that I hoped. And so I read that I had, and I started anyhow. And I was helped a little bit because clearly the book didn't know what it was about, because just a few weeks later I was 50 miles south in Albuquerque sitting in a cafe thumbing through the city's alternative weekly and saw a big quarter-page ad for a big screenwriting conference that was going to start in Santa Fe the following week. And I thought, what interesting synchronicity, serendipity, coincidence. Of course, there are no coincidences, but you know what I mean. Although I was a little concerned about the cost of the conference, I couldn't ignore the timing. And so I called up and I signed up immediately. And the following week, I went up Santa Fe and attended the conference. And although I talked about this in the opening of the screenwriting book, although I never really found the kind of methods and techniques I was looking for, it was certainly very exciting and inspiring to be surrounded by lots of screenwriters and produced screenwriters and film industry people. And I left after that week perhaps not a whole lot more technically proficient, but hugely inspired to continue.
Yes.
So I wrote several drafts of the screenplay, and even though it seemed even that the profit of getting it produced were even slimmer than getting the book published, this is a story I think I tell in the memoir, but not in the screenwriting book. Some months later, when I had finished the first, maybe the second or third draft, I was back in Albuquerque, and I was attending a one-day, this was still in Santa Fe, and I went and I, part of the admission to the conference was a pitch session, but to pitch your screenplay idea to a producer.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, I hadn't finished the screenplay, but I went to a pitching session and, pitched the story, because I had the book, or at least the manuscript, and the producer, who was like a third of my age or half my age, said, "That was a great story. Get the book published first." And I thought, great. That's really helpful.
So much for that.
Anyhow, we'll skip out a lot of the intermediate stuff and cut to, just recently. And I had just finished writing the memoir book that you mentioned. And And writing a book on screenwriting was kind of in the back of my mind, but not something I really wanted to do. I was pretty resistant to the idea of doing it for reasons that we can certainly talk about. But I woke up one morning knowing, without even an iota of doubt, that I had to do it. This was the next book I had to write. And I remembered, and I actually shared this quote in the introduction to the book, I remembered a quote that I had read, and I couldn't remember who said it. It's a little research, but it was Toni Morrison, the author Toni Morrison. And she had written at one point, "If there's a book you really want to read, but it hasn't been written yet, then you must write it." And I realized that this was the book I needed to write was the book I had wanted to read, that I had needed and couldn't find because there was no book like it, at least at that time.
Yes.
And so this was a book that I had to write, a book that took a whole kind of upside-down approach to screenwriting, upside-down as to the way it's normally presented and taught, and presented in the way that I had written my screenplay, which is option, by the way, really take all that I had learned and taught about writing over the years, techniques and methods, and I kept being surprised at how widely applicable they were, because when I first started out, I simply assumed they'd be really applicable only to creative writing. And I remember teaching a class a few years back where somebody attended who was writing her dissertation and came to me at the end of the class and said, "I can't begin to tell you how helpful this has been." And I was stunned.
Yeah.
I couldn't even begin to imagine that what I was teaching could help someone writing a thesis. So that was part of what gave me the confidence to do the book, because there is no genre or medium that involves writing or any form of creativity to which these principles that I have lived by and created by over the years cannot be successfully applied. And so that is a very long story of how the book was born.
Yes, it's really very helpful because I feel that it helps highlight what it is you are providing here, because what you've really done is funnel a good 20 years of expertise. During much of that time, you weren't writing screenplays, but it doesn't matter because you were writing, you were creating, you were listening on the Muse stream, which I'm going to ask you about in a minute. And so I feel that there's a lot of power in that. And, you know, as you were saying what you say about the book you write, I wonder if that's applicable to the movie you want to see. You know, some of us, just as you weren't necessarily ready to write a novel or didn't know if you could or a screenplay, I mean, I wonder if you see the movie that you want to see sometimes and you haven't seen it. And so maybe you're the one called to create that screenplay, if there are people listening out there thinking that.
Well, certainly, and I think that we are called to write, and of course my first book is subtitled Answering the Call to Write.
Yes.
We are called to write that which impassions us, that which excites us, that which we cannot not write.
Yes.
That doesn't make it easy. This book, Organic Screenwriting, was not an easy book for me to write, for a lot of reasons, but it was a book that I knew I had to write, at least as much for me as for anybody who ultimately reads it. So, yes, I think that whatever, whether it's a poem, a short story, a novel, an essay, a screenplay, a stage play, or any other form of writing, and I address a lot of this in my book and writer's block, if we don't care about it, then either we're going to get bogged down, bored, and give up, or blocked.
We'll shelve it.
Or what comes out at the other end isn't, I mean, if it doesn't excite the writer, why is it going to excite the reader?
That is such a good point.
If you don't care writing it, that's going to come true, and I'm not going to care reading it.
Well, if you don't care writing it, you may not even want to read it yourself. I mean, because that's what writing is. It's revealing it to you. And so, and I think we've all experienced this, you know, projects that have lost their passion. There's a part at the beginning of your book where you talk about really things that are much more qualitative than analytical, in the sense of, you know, discernment instead of rules, intuition instead of outlines. These are things in your book, passion instead of structure, you know, focusing on the core feeling of the project. And I wonder if you could speak to that and also introduce to those who haven't heard about your term, the Muse Stream, and what that is.
Sure. Let's start with that, because that really kind of informs everything that I do.
Yeah,
so a lot of people who are listening to this may know about Morning Pages, which were kind of created by Julia Cameron in her artist way, or terms like free writing, or the kinds of writing exercises that Natalie Goldberg in Writing Down the Bones and her other books on writing talked about, or free writing, automatic writing, stream of consciousness writing. These are all very similar, to the news stream, the idea being that you start to write and you don't stop for any reason. You just keep going and letting that come out, whatever comes out. Doing your best not to judge it, and certainly doing your best not to let any judgment stop you. So you don't edit while you write. You don't think while you write. When I used to teach in classrooms, the first thing I would write on the blackboard was write, comma, don't think, exclamation mark. Now, the difference between all those techniques I've talked about on the news stream is, for the most part, those techniques are used as personal growth exercises, and they're very powerful for journaling. They're very powerful. Or to prime your creative pump, and again, for that, they're very powerful. Where I take that a step far further is I say that techniques like that, or as I'm now calling it, the muse stream, can be used to write not only those kinds of things that I just listed, but a full-length project. You can use it to write your novel. You can use it, which actually amazed me, because I've been teaching this kind of writing, and then, of course, found myself writing The Moon Quest and discovering that, wow, it really works, and it really works for a full-length project. So it can be used to write a short story, it can be used to write a novel, it can be used to write a screenplay, as I discovered. It can be used in working with a dissertation. And the same principle, and as you say, it's all about discernment, it's all about trust, it's all about believing that and acting as though the story itself or the characters in the story, if it's somehow fiction, know what they're about better than you, the author, do, and really taking a back seat to the story itself. And that applies not only in the first draft, although of course, but in subsequent drafts and revisions where you're also not using the kind of slash and burn left brain techniques that I certainly began my editing career years and years and years ago using, but again, much more discerning, listening techniques to get the story out. And I want to go back to something you alluded to structure earlier on.
Yeah.
And one of the things that really surprised me, certainly in writing my novels, but perhaps even more so in writing the screenplays, again, because screenplays have a particular structure and have a particular length, was that in doing everything I just told you, in being discerning, in listening, in trusting, in acting, in writing as though the story is smarter than I am and knows itself better than I do, doing all those things, the structure and the structures and the themes and all those things that many writing instructors tell you have to plan out ahead of time, especially in screenwriting, they were all there.
Yeah.
Because they were all inherent in the story. They're inherent in all stories. And if we trust the story itself, whether it's a novel or a screenplay, and write from that place and create from that place, then those elements are there. Of course, in later drafts, you may have to work with it a little bit. But the essence of them exists already, and if we write from that place, they will be there. I didn't know what the theme of the Moon Quest was when I began. I was stunned when it was over and I realized what it was. And I continue to be stunned as people who read it tell me, share with me things and themes in it they see that I still haven't seen. I have a great story. This goes back to the novel, but it would apply equally to a screenplay.
Yeah.
The Moon Quest was out, and I had somebody who wanted to teach a course at Unity based on the book, which I felt I was really flattered by. I remember talking to him about there's some very dramatic and brutal scenes in the Moon Quest, just yes. a handful, but they're there.
Yes.
And there are scenes that made me uncomfortable when I wrote them. There are scenes that I always try to edit out. In fact, the first draft of the screenplay
yeah.
did not even have them there. And they
yeah,
went
that's
back
a good
in.
Question, is how do you translate that kind of a scene to film? So hold on. To
come back. Hold that thought. I'll come back and I have
yes,
a story about that
yes.
too. But I was, you know, but I was complaining to Michael one day about those scenes because in the, it's not so much the scenes themselves, it's the characters who had experienced those scenes in the past have to share their experiences with the other characters. It's still pretty graphic. And Michael said, I tell this story in Exorcist Under 2, it's like he's talking to a dimwit, a halfwit who hadn't actually written the book. He said, "Don't you get it?" He said, "Your book is about storytelling. Your book is about telling our
yeah.
stories, about not censoring ourselves."
Yes.
That's why these characters
well,
telling
please.
Those horrible stories about themselves is so important. And for the first time, you know, the book had been out for months and months and months. For the first time, I got it.
Yeah. Wow.
because somebody else who read it and got it told me, because I didn't know. I just wanted to cut those scenes out. So, okay, there's a woman who dreams that she's been raped and shares
yes.
a dream. There's a young man who has a dream about something that actually happened, which is the pillage and brutalization of a village.
Yeah.
Let's just talk about those two. And when I was writing the first draft of the screenplay, I thought, well, I'm going to have an X rating.
that's challenging. How do you translate?
It's going to buy the film. And so, again, as I say, in the first draft, I thought I was very clever. I just left those scenes out. I hadn't had that conversation with Michael yet about the value of those scenes. And in later drafts, I thought, okay, I know they have to go back in. What do I do? And this goes back to the way I create, which is I don't try to figure it out. I figure, to use the word again, that if those scenes belong in the story will show me the way. And
yeah.
that's what happened. So instead of showing the rape, which would have been way too much, for reasons that I hadn't even told you. I want to say something
yeah.
to people who read the book.
Right.
Focused on the young woman who was telling the story. So instead of it becoming a visual representation of what had happened, the focus was on her and on her face and on the responses of her companions.
Yeah.
So that really stripped not the power from it. In fact, in one sense, it may even have been more powerful because it really wasn't about what happened. It was, you know, as Michael had told me, it was about her sharing what had happened. And I think in many ways, the way it's presented is more powerful.
Yeah.
It's more talky, perhaps, but it's a focus. You know, again, these aren't my choices, but if the director's focus ends up being on her, you know, on her face, that will be, I mean, nobody will be able to move. They'll be so riveted by the performance.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the other situation, what I focused on was partly, in that case, I chose to show what had happened, but I focused. So the character who sees this is in the hills above looking down. So, of course, I'm focusing on him. And because the village is being burnt, I had a lot of smoke. I envisioned a lot of smoke. So like you're actually hearing more
yeah.
than you're seeing.
Yeah.
You catch glimpses
oh, that makes
of the violence.
Sense. Yeah.
But it doesn't, you know, it doesn't shoot the rating up from PG-13 to, you know, XXX.
Right.
because of all the horrific things that are happening, you get a sense of it for sure, but you don't have to see it.
Yeah.
And those were not solutions that I figured out, because my job is not to figure anything out. My job is to listen, and that's really what I talk about in all my writing books. And perhaps most radically in the screenwriting book.
Yes. Yes, because it seems like figuring it out is more an act of resistance to what's flowing.
Well, yes, and apart from that, and this is another reason I talk about outlines probably in all my books on writing, but perhaps most eloquently in this book because in screenwriting outlines are, I mean, I actually quote something from the, you know, Final Draft is the industry standard software for writing screenplays, and it is a great product. But on the website, they have various, you know, articles on craft, and one of the articles talks about the importance of outlining, not only of outlining, but, I mean, this I think it was a guy, had, like, dozens, an outline that was, like, a third of the length of the screenplay that also included dialogue. It was that, and the outline that he talks about as being necessary was that intense.
Wow.
And my attitude, which comes from never having been able to outline successfully, even back in high school, when you had to write an essay or a composition and handed
yes.
the outline, I couldn't do it.
Yes.
For all the same reasons why I failed miserably in chess club, I could not plan that far ahead. What I would do is I would write the essay, and if an outline was required, I would then write the outline. I tell this story, you know, when I give talks on writing or teach classes, and what happens is like there's two distinct groups in the room when I tell the story. The first group, they go white, they gasp, they clutch their throats because they can't imagine not having that kind of control over their story.
Yes, yes.
And
they probably think
group,
you're doing it wrong.
Right, exactly.
Yes, and there is no wrong.
And they're just so relieved and so relaxed because suddenly they have permission to do what they've always wanted to do but never dared.
That's
which
it.
Which is not outline.
That's it.
But the problem with an outline, especially if you treat it as gospel, is that then all the possibility that the magic of creation opens up for you is gone.
Yes.
So let me share you a story from the Star Quest. This is from the novel, not the screenplay. The Moon Quest screenplay was written from a virtually completed draft of the Moon Quest book. The Star Quest screenplay was written from a totally chaotic, all over the place first draft of the book, and the Sun Quest screenplay was written as an original screenplay. So each one was written differently, but in the Star Quest, and just to give you a little bit of background, the stories are linked but independent because they take place over three generations, and in the Star Quest, as I'm writing. In the Star Quest, one of the major villains is a woman. As I'm writing, I'm trying to imagine all the horrible ways she's going to come to a nasty end at the end of the book, because that's what happens to villains in fantasy stories,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And it's the last day that I'm working on this first track. I'm just about finished. I'm watching the clock because a coaching client is going to be coming over, you know, shortly. And as I'm writing, fully expecting this next scene to play out as her total fall and destruction, something shifts, and what happens to her is quite the reverse. She has a redemptive experience and the whole story changes. She changes.
Yeah.
And I was startled is not even a strong enough word. I mean, I was dumbfounded because it was not an ending that I could have begun to consciously imagine or figure out or throw into an outline. But it was an ending that was so perfect.
Yes, that's the word that's in my head. Yes.
Because by that time I had come to sense at least one of the themes of the story, and that ending was much more in alignment with that theme. So then I thought, okay, I'm going to have to go back now and make sure that this ending makes sense, right?
Right.
Because I presented her as this, you know, as a super bitch.
Yes, inconsistent. Right.
And that's
right.
Okay, fine. I will go back to these scenes and I'll see what needs to be done to make it make sense. I discovered, to my amazement, that there was nothing I needed to do. I had assumed she was a certain way, and it certainly appeared that certain way, but the ending that happened did not need to be built up to. Hints of it were already there, and it was fine. So, again, when we trust the story, and trust that the story is smarter than we are, and go with its flow in the news stream, if you will, then we don't have to fix things like that. Going back to the example of those scenes in the Moon Quest that I just told you the story about, I wrote those scenes after the third or fourth or fifth draft because I felt that at that point I felt that those three of the four characters were not fleshed out enough. I didn't really know enough about them. So one of the techniques that I talk about in the screenwriting book and also in some of my other books is I kind of went into a meditative kind of conversation with each of these characters in turn to find out more about who they were. And in the case of these two characters in the Moon Quest, I discovered this backstory that I know nothing about, and ultimately took what they told me and wrote scenes. And I thought, okay, well, now I've got these scenes that don't seem to fit anywhere into the book. You've got a completed manuscript, right?
Right.
So I thought, okay, well, I will read the manuscript, I'll read the book, and see what I need to do to incorporate these scenes in. Well, kind of just like the story I just told you about the Star Quest, as I read the book, all the scenes that I had written, except for one or two, I think I wrote about 10 scenes from those conversations, all but two of those scenes slotted in as though I had left a space for them without knowing it. And the transition I needed to write was minimal, if anything, for all those scenes. So once again, it's like I had unconsciously left a place for those scenes until I was ready to write them. I certainly wasn't ready to write them that first or second go through. But somehow I had left, because I was not trying to figure the story out by letting the story drive me rather than the other way around, I had left space. And those scenes slotted in effortlessly. So once again, and this again, these are stories about the two novels, but I had I had experiences like that in the Sun Quest, which I wrote as an original screenplay as well, where by letting go and allowing the story to show me the way, it all worked out.
That is so magical. As you're talking, I can't help but think about the analogies with life itself. You know, it just all flows together. And you allow that openness into your writing, I mean, just into your creative stream.
Well, you know, life and creativity, to me, operate on the same principles because they really are the same thing. And for anybody who's read any of my books on writing or been to any of my classes or workshops, I usually have kind of tongue-in-cheek rules that I teach from and hand out.
It's true.
Or write about in the book. And the first rule and the last rule in all of these lists of rules is that there are no rules. So that's what kind of tongue-in-cheek. They're really principles and guidelines, but there really are no rules. It's what is going to work for you today. What is going to work for you forever. What is going to work for you today. And that's what you need to do. And it's as true in life as it is in creativity.
Yes. Now, I know that you've written a lot. You've written a whole book on this, and you also address it within this book on screenwriting. What do you do? And it's funny, as I'm saying this, a giant truck is coming down my street, as if to block the show. The question was going to be about what happens when you're blocked or there's some kind of, it's just not really flowing. I know you have certain techniques that people can use when that happens.
Yeah, and again, I have a whole book about this.
Writer's Block Unblock. Touch it.
Writer's Block
here.
Unblock. 7 surefire ways to free up your writing and creative flow. And so, of course, I do go into great detail in that book. But I think one of the perhaps key things, is something we've already talked about, is ask yourself the question, do I care about this project?
Yes.
Am I blocked because I don't give a damn?
Yeah.
because that's a major cause of writer's block. We just don't care.
Right.
So sometimes, if you're writing for a living or you have a deadline or you're doing certain kinds of writing, you have no choice. You do the best you can. But
yes.
If you're doing any kind of creative work and you don't care about your writing, why are you doing it?
Exactly.
The other thing is, again, return to the muse stream. If you're just write anything, just write gibberish on the page.
You always have that
if
rule.
You have to. Free associate off the last word or sentence you wrote. Repeat the last word or sentence you wrote. What's often happening in situations like that is that your judgmental mind, your inner censor, your inner critic is saying, you can't write that, you don't dare write that, it's dangerous to write that, and so you get stuck. If you keep writing anything, it kind of dulls that voice, and you will likely have to eliminate all this nonsense that you've written, or at least most of it, but by continuing to write through and past whatever is stopping you, the flow will nearly always resume. See how you're breathing. Is your breathing tight? If you're tight, your breathing is probably tight. So focus again on your breath. One of the other techniques I have people do is kind of write meditatively, and as they're breathing in, slowly write, I am breathing in. As they're breathing out, write, I am breathing out. And just keep kind of lining up with your breath, and you're lining your breath and you're writing it together until the flow resumes. And again, it generally does.
Yeah.
The other question to ask is, are you blocked not because it's the wrong project, but maybe it's the wrong time? I remember, again, going back to the Moon Quest. I've got tons of stories of the Moon Quest, but here's another one. This was less a blocked issue, but it still illustrates the story. I had written about 100 manuscript pages of the Moon Quest, and some of my life got turned upside down. I sold everything I owned. I moved 1,000 miles from Toronto to Nova Scotia and sort of began all over again, and did not work on the book because life had gotten in the way. And
that happens. Yes.
When it does happen, and when I got back, I remember 5 or 6 months later. It was December. It was cold. It was windy, I just knew that it was time to go back to Moon Quest. Again, discernment, right? It's not like I have to do it. I know it's time to do it.
And
I dug out the manuscript and sat it on my kitchen table and stared at it for 24 hours because I was terrified. to read it. Because so much time had passed and so much life had passed that I thought, what if it's no good? What if I've moved so far beyond it that there's no story for me there anymore? Anyhow, following day after lunch, I picked up the pile of paper and took it into the living room. And optimist that I was, I carried in a notepad and a pen, and I sat down to read. And the moment I finished, I took up the pen and continued. And what I came to realize, and this goes back to the timing issue, is that I needed those 5 or 6 months of life experience before I could continue the book. And sometimes if the book is taking us into deep places within ourselves, or the screenplay is taking us into deep places within ourselves, and we haven't grown into those places fully yet, maybe we need a break from whatever it is to live that growth. That was my experience with the Moon Quest. The Star Quest story is even more radical because it took me 11 years and 3 tries before I could even finish the first draft of the Star Quest. A lot of life can happen in 11 years, and a lot of life did happen in those 11 years. So it's not that I was blocked, though it sure felt that way some days. It's that it wasn't time. And here again is where discernment comes in. It's not automatically not time. It's not automatic that you're blocked. What, you know, you have to go into those places within you and find out what's going on. And discernment is a practice. It's not like you can say, okay, I know. Sometimes you will get it right. I put right in quotation marks because there really is no right or wrong.
That's
and sometimes
right.
you will perceive it as having been wrong.
Yes.
But I know that I could not have returned to MoonQuest any earlier, and I know that when I finally was able to finish that first draft of the StarQuest, I had grown into the story, into a story that was way more evolved than I had been, and that's why I couldn't write it. So you do all these things and more, and I talk about them in the writer's blog book and touch on in the screenwriting book as well, and the memoir book for that matter. I mean, all these things are things to be aware of when you think you're blocked. And the other thing to do is never say I'm blocked. Don't own the block.
That's so important. Yeah, that just makes it worse.
I feel stuck is okay. because there's in both the voice of the muse and in the writer's blog book, there's a whole chapter on language to watch for in terms of your own speech and thoughts that ingrain judgment or ingrain diminishment or ingrain self-criticism or self-doubt, and certainly I am blocked as one of them.
Yes. You know, what comes through so much through multiple books of yours, including this one, and I really feel writing for film, this would come through. It just seems that whenever you're feeling, you said it a little bit ago, you know, some version of, can I really write this? You know, how daring can you be? And yet, isn't that when you're being the most real and the most compelling and making exactly the story that people need to hear?
No, absolutely. I mean, I think that I didn't talk about one of the biggest reasons we feel blocked is because we're terrified.
Yes, and this is a show about fear, so it's
right,
a good
exactly.
point.
So we're scared.
Yes.
And so that even if we're not conscious of being, even if we're not consciously scared, we're scared, and that fear dams up the flow.
Yes.
Going back to the muse stream analogy, which is why continuing to write anything, it helps get you past that. But sure, I mean, if you're writing this stuff, especially if you were not used to writing in this way, and I would get this a lot when I would teach workshops, because of course then I had the people in front of me who had never written this way before, and what comes out of them is something so foreign to the way they've written before or even thought before that of course they lead to judgment, because it's got to be bad. And what happens, because in the workshops I teach or classes I encourage people to share what they've written, not so much because it's empowering, although that's true, but because they tend to be so judgmental, and the work they produce, while raw, is so powerful, almost universally, that it's important for them to hear that from other people in the room. So when we write from that raw place of raw emotion, then the writing may initially be raw. That's what revisions and drafts are for, but the emotion and the core of it is powerful, and that's what we want to go for. I mean, you don't want to write what's been homogenized and what's been drained of all emotion. Who's going to care? I mean, when you go to the movies, or when you read a book, when you read a novel, or a memoir for that matter, you want to be in the story and identify at some level with those characters and feel what they're about. Because in effect, you're not reading their story, you're reading your story through the filter of their experiences.
Yes.
And
you know,
if the writer isn't there, the reader or viewer won't be there.
Yes. It's almost as if transformation is contagious, is that it is in a way. It is, because even fictional transformation, because if you think of the stories that have had the most impact on you, and a lot of times, I mean, film is such a powerful, powerful medium to reach a great many people and really instill transformation in the world. And so if you're transformed as you're writing your screenplay by doing it so intuitively, that's the energy that you want to bring into the world as a creative contribution. And so that's what I see as you're speaking of this.
Yeah. No, I mean, writing, if you're writing from this deep place, then writing is an act of transformation for you as a writer.
Yes.
And so, again, if you have any resistance to that, regardless of the medium or the genre, you're likely to feel some panic, and you're likely to feel fear, and you may feel blocked. I mean, I experienced a lot of fear. You wouldn't think that writing a book about screenwriting would bring up all my core issues, but it did.
Yeah.
Because I'm writing, as you and I talked about privately a few days ago, I'm writing a book that challenges the very foundation upon which the craft of screenwriting has been built. And I have, like everybody else, I have issues around being judged, which is why there's a lot of that is covered in all my books on writing, and in fact, the novels too, because those are some of my core issues. So as I'm writing this book and and not directly, but through what I'm saying, challenging these notions, you know, my core fears of being judged harshly come up. So it was
this book. Yes. Go ahead.
This, of all the books, well, certainly this is my fourth book on writing. It's the most personally transformational book on writing for me of the four that I've written.
Yes. I was just going to say, though, that just as you were looking, you said it at the beginning of this show, there may be some people who this book doesn't speak to us at first. I hope that they listen to what it has to say, but there are so many people out there that are looking for it. It doesn't exist. And there's so many other books that, and I know this, I actually bought a gift for someone last year who's interested in screenwriting, so I did the research and found the books, you know, a couple of the ones that are rated highly and all that. And the thing is if this approach is going to resonate with so many creative spirits out there, and it's contagious too in its own way. But, I mean, freedom is contagious. Anything that frees us. And so I could see how you would judge it, and yet I see what, you know, how you freed yourself from that and also what a gift it is, because it's missing and it draws on things that you have been working with for years and years and years, and so you're able to bring that forward.
No, absolutely. I mean, I think that you know, if nobody ever reads this book, which of course won't make my ego happy, but if nobody ever reads this book, I have been so dramatically formed by the writing of it. And in the end,
that's important. Yes.
In the end, that's all that's important. I mean, I hate to say it, but I hate to say it for listeners. But in the end, that's all that's important. Yes, I want to be read. Yes, I want to have an impact on people, and both of those do happen. But ultimately, the biggest impact I have on people is the impact I have on myself.
Yes.
And so, when I began this book, I mean, this book. Kind of, it sure didn't feel like it only took a month, but it only took a month.
It's amazing.
It felt like it took 30 years, and then I aged 30 years writing this, but I actually probably look 30 years younger because of all that I let go of in the writing of it. So, you know, there's a chapter, if I remember right, in The Voice in here that talks about publishing. And says, you know, it's not about whether your book is published or not, as wonderful as that would be, but if you're changed by your book, and if you write from those deep places, you will be, as I have been by each of my books, and frankly, each time I revisit my fantasy, my Quintana fantasy novels, the Moon Quest stories, Moon Quest, Star Quest, Sun Quest, either because I'm doing a new draft or because I'm working on a new form like a screenplay or another new form like the musical, I'm transformed yet again because these stories, because they come from deep places, have a depth that continues to work on me. But if we write from those deep places and are transformed, then when we are out in the world as transformed people, the world changes too because people can no longer relate to us in the old way because we aren't the way we were.
And
so, in effect, the book is published through you, even if it's not published in paper or pixels if it's an e-book. It's published through you because you now embody what the book is.
Yes. Yes. That's just so profoundly powerful. And it itself through all of your work. And I think that, you know, it's funny. I asked you when it's, you know, there's so many people looking for all sorts of ways to write different things, you know, screenplays and plays for that matter. And yet the fascinating thing is you kind of answer that question in this book because a lot of the approaches are similar. I mean, it's the same process, and it really begins with you, like you say. It's within ourselves that we are the creators, and I so appreciate how you're bringing that forward, Mark David. And by the way, we're within the last 3.5 minutes of the live show, and it goes by always so quickly. But, you know, let me give you the opportunity to remind people where they can learn about your book and find out more about your work.
Sure. All of my books are available on most Amazon websites in paperback and worldwide as ebooks in Kindle, Nook, Kobo, and iBookstores. You can find me at least at Amazon.com at Amazon.com/author/MarkDavidGerson. And Mark David Gerson, all one word, is the username I use practically everywhere online. You'll find me that way on Facebook, on Google+, on Twitter, on YouTube, where I also have a bunch of inspirational videos on creativity. And if you go to markdavidgerson.com, you will find the current website, which is about to go in for a major overhaul. That's one of my next projects. But you'll certainly find all the books on Amazon. And some of the organic screenwriting isn't yet available, but all the other books, I believe, are also at barnesandnoble.com, although not necessarily in the stores, but on the website and at other online retailers as well.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being here again, Mark David. I always enjoy having you on the show. We always have such an organic conversation, I must say, and it's a true joy to have you here.
Well, thank you, Susan. It's always a pleasure to chat with you on the air.
Well, thank you so much. And we'll be looking forward to what you produce next because there's always something right around the corner.
There is always something next, isn't there?
It's true. So thank you again. And we will talk to you again soon, I imagine.
Okay.
Take care.
Thanks, Susan. Bye-bye now.
Bye. Okay, just a quick reminder to the live audience. The next show is Monday, May 19th at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. This is going to be a rather interesting, adventurous show on Monday with Larry and Stacy Overman. They are creators of the Ghost Mind series on the Sci-Fi Channel, which is no longer on the Sci-Fi Channel, but they have new projects related to that series and are going to talk to us in the domain of fear about just what they confronted. This is a powerful topic when you confront the supernatural or what seems to just be totally outside your realm of experiences, and that's what happened to them. How do you approach that? So it's going to be an interesting show. Check out frontierbeyondfear.com for all the upcoming episodes as well as the archived shows. This broadcast is out there, or will be out there shortly, and we have quite a large number of archived shows now. This show's been going on now for a good 3.5 years, and just like Mark David, whose website, by the way, just to remind you, is markdavidgerson.com, he's upgrading his website. I am gradually trying to get more things out on mine as well, and hopefully organize it into categories and make it much easier for you to find the various shows, because we're now getting quite a few repeating guests, and I'm very much called to do more work with it, but as with all things, it takes its time. It'll be out in perfect timing, but in the meantime, you certainly can find such a wealth of wisdom. If you've come to this program today because you're interested in film, I would highly recommend, for example, you listen to the show with Ed Kramer, who is a special effects artist who did a wonderful show last year. And I hope to continue to branch into various categories. That I know so many are working creatively in the entertainment industry. Another show to look for in my repertoire, Phil Lernis, very talented filmmaker who's made multiple films. He was on the show as well. So anyway, thank you so much, everyone, for being here. This particular show I placed in the film category, which, again, is a little bit unusual. It's outside the box. Normally I'm over in spirituality. Well, I wanted to reach those of you who really need to hear this information, and I think that it branches into spirituality and basically everywhere, but where it most belongs is film, and I probably will do some more entertainment-oriented shows, including, again, the next broadcast, Monday, May 19th, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, Larry and Stacy Overman from the Ghost Mind series. So thank you, everyone. Hope you have a wonderful day, evening, wherever this show finds you. Take care, everyone. ¶¶